Well, my name is Brent. This is my partner, Ryan, back here, and we're going to kind of tag team teach this one this morning. We're pastors here along with Amy at Ashworth, and we're wrapping up this series that we've been in called You've Been Lied To, and we're sorry about that. Now, you guys may lose track of this. We don't lose track of this, but we started this series way back in September, 9 weeks ago, September the 15th, to be accurate. Does anybody remember those days? Just so you know, I looked it up. The weather that day was 89 degrees. Anybody want to go back to those days? Yep, me too. You know, if you've been around Ashworth for any length of time, though, you might kind of question. You think you've been in this series a long time, and we have been. And typically, we don't stay in a series anywhere near this long. Typically, it's about 4 to 6 weeks max. Sometimes in the summer, because people are in and out a little more, we'll do something longer there. But in the fall, typically it's 4 weeks, 6 weeks tops, and we move on to something else because we don't want you guys to lose interest in what we're saying. But in this series, when we originally began talking about it, we actually had 3 weeks planned. And that was it, just 3 weeks on three different lies that we were going to address and then move on. But as we began to really in detail map out this series, we really began to understand that there were a lot more than just three lies that needed to be addressed. There are a lot more than three assumptions around the Christian faith, around what it means to follow Jesus, what we inside the church sometimes believe, and especially sometimes what those outside the church believe about us. We really saw that this list was pretty lengthy in what we believed we needed to address through this series. And our hope in this series is that through this journey over these past 8-9 weeks, that we've deconstructed some things. We want to tear down some presuppositions, some beliefs that you might have in what it means to follow Jesus. Because as we've talked about week in and week out, sometimes when we hold a little too tightly to these beliefs, they can be damaging to our own faith. They can create struggles and internal conflict within us. And, you know, just take faith means no doubt. That when we start to doubt, we think, oh, well, I must not have enough faith. I must not be a good Christian. So it begins to take us away from God instead of towards God. And then also we wanted to do this in order to address barriers that we know exist when other people look at Christ and look at Christ followers. And these things become barriers that prevent them from coming to faith in Jesus. And I hope we haven't just deconstructed, but I hope through the process we've reconstructed healthier biblical beliefs around what it means to know and follow Jesus. These eight that we've addressed in this series, we could have gone longer. You're welcome that we didn't. There are more. Many more misconceptions, more challenges to our faith, and more barriers that we create for others to overcome, or hoops that we create for them to jump through to get to Jesus. You know, things that we add on to the faith, that we do so to make ourselves feel comfortable, but they're really not required by Jesus. You know, sometimes I wonder if, as we sit here week in and week out, if we don't often look for reasons at times to keep people out, rather than to find ways to remove the add-ons, to remove the barriers, to help people come in, to help people find Jesus. You know, we hold up statements like, God won't give you more than you can handle, or faith means no doubt. But when we see people struggle, we look at them with kind of a judgmental eyes, and we kind of go, wonder what you've done. Wonder what's wrong in your life. And as they struggle, we go, your faith obviously isn't strong enough, and it's certainly not strong as mine. And worse yet, when we allow these ideas and these false beliefs to kind of take fruit to bloom in our lives, what we find is that we begin to reduce them as human beings. Seeing them in the midst of the struggle, we see them as something less than, not really worth our effort, or not worth our kind of people, whatever that means. Or we believe, you know, as we think about Christianity and faith, you know, it's very popular for us to say we need to call to take power, to exert our influence by force if necessary, or belong to a certain political party as if Jesus has blessed one political party over the other. So we pick up our figurative swords and we go into the world, you know, but in doing so, we often look like the most unloving, uncompassionate people that exist. And we make enemies of those people, again, whoever they are, enemies that have to be defeated and destroyed. These lies are very challenging. They're very difficult. They create obstacles that people who just need to see Jesus, they don't get the opportunity to because of these things we've put up in the way. Or when we say, you know, you have to have one very specific view of the Bible. You have to come to the Bible and you have to believe everything I believe. You have to have a specific view of creation or a specific view of end times or a specific view of baptism or even a specific view of God Himself. And if it doesn't match us, you can't be a part of our group. You know, and for so long we told people that in order to belong, you had to believe the right things. And what that does is it basically told people that you're not worth it unless you line up with what I'm saying. And we've entered a time in our culture where people see through that. They don't want to be your project. They don't want this false relationship where they can see through it, where you're just friending them in order to get something out of them, which is their attendance at church or their tithe money at church or whatever. People don't want to be manipulated. People don't want to be controlled. What they want is to have an opportunity to be able to walk into an environment where they can be accepted for who they are in that moment, but come to explore the claims of Jesus Christ, to explore this thing called faith, to find out, do I want to move forward? Do I want to believe this? Is this something even that's viable for my life? And they want to look at us, and they want to ask those who claim to follow Jesus, will you live up to the principles you say you have of love and compassion, of caring for the hurting, the immigrant, the orphan, the widow? Does your language match your behavior? They want to belong with a chance to evaluate for themselves without all the add-ons, without all the extras that we put on them before we let them in. And so what happens is if people don't align with our stances on certain issues or our political ideology, we don't associate with them, we toss them aside. And to be honest, they probably didn't want to really be a part of who we were or what we say we represent anyway. For some reason, we confuse unity with uniformity. And before we know it, we create theology out of preference, or our so-called good ideas become our gospel rather than the gospel. And all the while, we're constructing barriers to people seeing Jesus, experiencing His love, and finding true and abundant life in Him. These barriers or add-ons we create become our beliefs, and we've identified them. We said they're really lies, and we add them to the message of Jesus. And we add them in such a way that people believe that Jesus by Himself isn't enough. That in order to get to Jesus, to follow Him, you have to have all these other things as well.
And here's the thing about Christians. We've been trying to add to Jesus' message ever since He was walking on this earth. While He was alive, people were wanting Him to be the one who is going to bring their freedom from the oppressive Roman soldiers. Like, they had their idea of what the king was supposed to be, of what the Messiah was supposed to do. They wanted the Messiah of the Old Testament, plus we want our freedom now. And so it's not surprising that then since His ascension into heaven, people have been adding whatever it is that they deem most important to His message. Early on in church history, the Gnostics added some weird spiritualism to the gospel, trying to fit Jesus into their own system of God. So they were Jesus plus spiritualism. And then in the Middle Ages, we might know in our church history, the Catholic Church had indulgences and confession to the priest. So Jesus plus indulgences and tradition. And today you can find people who are even following, they call themselves Torah observant Christians. And they believe that today it is still our job to be following the Old Testament exactly how the laws are laid out in the Torah, the Pentateuch, the first five books. So what we eat, the festivals that we hold to, the sacrifice systems, all those things, it's Jesus plus the Torah. So you can see that these lies that have been peddled in churches in recent decades now, like we've been covering in this series, are really nothing new. It really seems like all along Christians have been wanting or have been trying to require more. We believe that we should be asking people for more, that the bar is even higher than what Jesus Himself set the bar to be. That people have wanted to make the entry into the kingdom of God even more restrictive than Jesus ever said. He said, come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden. And we say, come to me and do all these things before you can step foot into the kingdom. In fact, these issues began spreading across the church within 20 years of Jesus leaving earth and going to be with the Father in heaven. Within 20 short years, we already have a history of the church and people in the church trying to make it Jesus plus something else. So today we're going to look at some of the very first barriers that Christians tried adding to the gospel to block the way for other people to come into the kingdom. And so if you'd like to turn with me to the book of Galatians, we're going to be looking at one of these first rubbing points. And this book is likely the second letter that the Apostle Paul ever wrote. So the second letter in what is considered our New Testament in our Bible. And he wrote it to a group of churches in the province of Galatia. And that happened to be a region where Paul planted some of the very first churches. He was a prolific church planter. And on his first and second missionary journeys, he went through this region of Galatia. He planted these churches. He knows what he taught these people to believe. But now he gets a report of some things going on. And a bit of backstory here. So Paul was one of the first people to take the message of Jesus outside of just the Jewish faith. And he was comfortable doing that because he's the only person that we have a record in our Bibles that he was met face to face with Jesus. And Jesus said, "Paul, why are you persecuting me? Stop what you're doing, trying to push the Jewish faith, and start teaching me. In fact, I want you to take me to the Gentiles." The Gentiles are those who are not the Jewish people, the Greeks, people from all around the Middle Eastern region, the Mediterranean. And Jesus told him, "I want you to go to all those places where nobody else is going." And so Paul took that instruction and he began sharing Jesus, establishing churches of people who worship Jesus as God, who put their faith in Jesus for the forgiveness of their sins, and who live together in community with one another, following all the teachings of Jesus as their Lord and Savior. He did that. He knows what he taught them. Unfortunately, some things went sideways when some Jewish Christians infiltrated these churches that Paul had established. And so now these Gentile Christians felt like all of a sudden they were being told that they had to follow different rules, different regulations. They had to do Jesus plus in order to be right with God. So let's read what the Apostle Paul wrote. First in chapter 1, verses 6 and 7. He starts out with pretty strong language here. He says, "I am astonished that you are so quickly deserting the one who called you to live in the grace of Christ and are turning to a different gospel, which is really no gospel at all. Evidently, some people are throwing you into confusion and are trying to pervert the gospel of Christ." And then towards the end of the letter, Paul makes clear what this big perversion of the gospel is. It's that these people are trying to make new Christians live according to the old religious rites and rules. He says in Galatians chapter 6, 12 and 13, "Those who want to impress people by means of the flesh are trying to compel you to be circumcised. The only reason that they do this is to avoid being persecuted for the cross of Christ. Not even those who are circumcised keep the law, yet they want you to be circumcised that they may boast about your circumcision in the flesh." So a little bit about circumcision here quickly. God required it in the Old Testament. All the Jews were. All the Gentiles were not. Now, this is kind of a big point that is being brought to the Greek church, saying, "Hey, here's the message of Jesus, and here's one of the rituals that you all need to follow." And so we have to understand here, this is a big deal. Like, yeah, they're teaching it's Jesus and forgiveness of sins, and he will make you right with God, and follow all the rules, follow all the regulations, and gentlemen, you have to be circumcised as well. And I understand, circumcision, I don't think much about it. In America, we reserve that for babies, mostly, sometimes immigrants. I've got a funny story for you. But babies primarily, if somebody came to me and said, "Hey, Ryan, at this point in life, we need to do this," my indifference towards circumcision might change dramatically. I might be one of those people hearing this story and going, "Circumcision, wait, what? Stop, pause. Let's talk about that. Let's stop talking about Jesus. Let's talk about these other things that I have to do, because I've got some real problems with that. And I've got some problems with your dietary restrictions. I've got some problems with this. Jesus, I'm fine with. The healing, the miracles, eternal life. Yeah, that's great. Hold on. Tell me more about these things. And then when they start pushing, you got to do this, you got to do that, all of a sudden, let's imagine 2,000 years ago, people weren't that different than we are today. The message of Jesus is good news. The message of all the other trappings of religiosity and Christianity can sometimes be too much. And we hit a point where people go, I think I'll pass. That does not sound too appealing to me. Basically, what happened here is that the Judaizers, as they were known, the Christians who were trying to merge Jewish ways of thought into it, were trying to teach the people that all you need is Jesus plus. And they made this big, long list, and they said, Jesus and this, Jesus and that, Jesus and circumcision. But that's not something that most people were willing to do. Paul was saying that was a different gospel. That was no gospel at all. That was a perversion of what he came and established those churches to believe. A perversion of the truth that Jesus brought to the world for us as the church 2,000 years later to be bringing to others. Jesus plus is a perversion. It is wrong. It's not right, and we can't be spreading it. No, the authentic gospel message, one without perversion, one that we are to be sharing with the world today, is Jesus only. Anything that adds to the message of Jesus is not right. It's messing it up. It's twisting it. It's a lie that's being added to the good news that Jesus brought. It makes it unnecessary. And what it really does is it dissuades people from ever being willing to even hear or give a chance to the message of Jesus. Unfortunately, while Jesus plus makes for really bad evangelism, the early church really didn't seem to learn their lesson.
Not at all. In fact, as you go back and you reach Acts chapter 15, you find this interesting story. So Paul had already written to the church at Galatia, and then you have this interesting story in Acts 15 where you see that this problem wasn't just isolated to one area. It actually had spread to the entire church. Like the entire known church at that time, all those that were following Jesus, this was becoming a big issue, that it was Jesus plus something else. And so the church leaders get wind of this, and they realize that we have to do something about this. We have to address this before it gets out of control. And so what we find in Acts 15 is this controversy comes to a head when the Jewish Christians try to force the issue and make it a requirement. Not just circumcision, but you had to become a Jew completely before you could really be a Christian. That these two things went hand in hand. And before we get all critical and criticize and think, how could these people do this? Remember, the Jewish people started Christianity. Jesus is a Jew, okay? So for many years, you kind of had this conglomeration melded group of people that were really trying to figure out who are we and what does it mean to follow Jesus. So it'd be very natural to have all these other things kind of piled on top and say, well, no, you have to do this, this, and this. So as the church leaders come together, you find that the apostles like Peter and Paul and the other apostles, they come together. And there's a guy named James, and we believe he was the brother of Jesus. Now, this is interesting because James, the brother of Jesus, when Jesus was on earth, didn't believe Jesus. He thought Jesus was crazy. But after the resurrection and after the ascension, James rises and becomes a leader in the church, and he's one of the primary guys in this moment that's helping shape the future of the church. And then you see that they also bring the elders of the church in, and they meet, and they say, let's figure out what we need to do. And in the end, what they decide is they said, you know, look, you cannot require someone to become a Jew to accept all the Jewish requirements before they can follow Jesus. And it basically comes down to this. If Jesus didn't require it, how can we? You basically have to take a step back and say, what was it that Jesus said? What was it that he required. And as we talk about this, it's not like we're going, well, Jesus just made it very easy. No, Jesus made radical statements like, not just come follow me, but unless you die, unless you take up your cross daily and follow me. That's a pretty serious standard for people. I mean, the disciples left their families, left their livelihoods for 3 years to follow Jesus and never went back and continued to spread the gospel. The standard is high enough as it is, but we don't need to be adding to it. Now, we'll say, if you read Acts 15, they not only said, hey, you can't become a Jew. They did say, look, be aware of what other Christians are doing. There are other Jewish Christians out there that are following Jesus, and some things offend them, some things they struggle with. So those of you that have freedom, be willing to sacrifice some of your freedom and your maturity to allow others to not stumble because of what you're doing. So be gracious to one another, is what they said. So they sent this letter out, and they sent it to all the churches. And as we've been talking about, you understand that whether it's the first century back then or it's today, we have to be very aware. Are we trying to add our own requirements to the message of Jesus? As Ryan and I were talking about this and putting this message together this week, he came up with what I thought was a very brilliant representation. Don't tell him I said that. It'll go straight to his head. But this was a really great picture that I thought will illustrate what we're talking about. So we have the cross, and the cross represents the sacrifice of Jesus. And we remember the cross isn't the complete gospel. We talked about that a few weeks ago. It's just part of the gospel that should always be thought of with the resurrection and the complete restoration that is to come, the new creation where God restores everything. That's where it's pointing to. But for this illustration, it's our visual representation of Jesus, salvation, and faith. And when we see the world around us and the people who might be searching, and we tell them, or they just hear and assume, that in order to be a Christian, you have to believe certain things about the Bible, then what we find is the Bible becomes a barrier. They have to get through before they can get to Jesus. Now, I'm not saying the Bible shouldn't be believed. I believe the Bible is inspired. It's our authority for life. But sometimes we put a certain view on the Bible, and sometimes that becomes a barrier that people go, I don't know about that. And we have to ask ourselves, is their view of the Bible more important than their view of Jesus? That's the first thing. Then we hear that in order to follow Jesus, you have to belong to a certain political party. So we add that and we say, oh, okay. Now I know that both of those signs up there created a response in almost everybody in the room, which is awesome. But we say, you want to follow Jesus? Get your politics right. Vote correctly. Then you also hear things like this. You have to have a personal relationship with Jesus. So you have to pray a certain prayer. So make sure you're praying that right prayer. And then they keep going and they say, but you know what? Don't ever struggle with doubt. And if it means you can't ever doubt, it means you really need to check your brain at the door. So don't ever think about anything, because if you think, you might doubt. And so there's this conflict that's created between what I think and what I'm supposed to have faith in. Or we believe that you're supposed to become this obnoxious activist for Jesus that says, get your signs ready and go out there and just picket everything. Or, you know what, even worse, it says, you know, just have faith. Put a smile on your face, regardless of what happens in life, because God won't give you more than you can handle. And you realize what we've just done. By adding each of these things as a requirement, as an add-on, as a barrier, we don't even any longer get to see the cross. We can't even see Jesus anymore because we've replaced it with our own preferences and our own agenda that the other people have to abide by to be one of us. He said, I'd love to say this doesn't happen often, but you know what? The church in America is so guilty of this. When we sent missionaries out to third world countries and countries around the world, it was amazing that when we took the gospel message, we took Western culture and packaged it up together, and we said, you want to be a Christian and a Christ follower, then you need to look like me as well as believe like me. And if you don't think so, just go to some of these nations around the world where you'll walk in on a Sunday morning and people who can't really afford a suit are wearing a suit and a tie because some missionary 50 years ago convinced them that in order to follow Jesus, you have to look a certain way. And what a tragedy, because instead of wearing the beautiful garments of their land, they're trying to look like us. And they've packaged Jesus and Western, and they believe that these things go together, and they don't. We don't have the corner on Jesus. And we don't have the corner on what Jesus has to look like right now, even in our culture. As I said a couple weeks ago, all really people need to see and understand in the beginning is Jesus Christ and Him crucified and risen. That's it. We want to make it more complicated, but the Apostle Paul said, look, the cross in and of itself is a stumbling block, is a barrier to most people. That's more than enough for people to get over. We don't have to add anything else to it, because when you think about faith as itself, faith in Jesus Christ, what did Jesus say? Jesus said you don't have to earn it, that the gospel is something I've done for you, that the cross has paid the price, that my resurrected life is for you, and that what raised me from the dead will bring you life as well. And some people look at that and go, no, I can't do that. I want to earn my way. I have to do my part. And God says, no, I've done everything for you. I've pursued you. I've done everything from the beginning. I've come after you. And that itself, for many people, is a barrier, a stumbling block. So why would we try to add anything else beyond that? We have to become people that do anything and everything we can possibly do to remove the barriers, to stop believing and propagating these lies that keep people from really seeing Jesus. And yes, it will make us uncomfortable. It will mean we will have to walk with people and love people who don't believe like us, who don't look like us, who are going to stumble and fall, who are going to let us down from time to time. But if me being a little uncomfortable means others get a clearer picture of Jesus, then how can I possibly complain about that? What is it this morning that you might be holding on to that is creating a barrier from somebody to seeing Jesus? Is it your view of the Bible or politics? Is it a blind faith or your isolated faith by yourself? We must be willing to take a long, hard look and to see if we have unintentionally made things we are comfortable with, but are not taught by Jesus or the Bible, have we made them prerequisites for following Jesus? And let's remove those things, and let's look for ways to remove those barriers so everybody has the opportunity to see Jesus. And you know what we'll find when we do that? Is that we don't have to worry about how clever we are. We don't have to worry about how convincing we are. Because Jesus said Himself, and I, if I be lifted up, I will draw all men unto me. And that is why on Sundays when we meet, Jesus sits right in the center. Because I don't have to convince you of anything. Jesus is all you need to see. And He can convince you. He can draw you. This morning, maybe some of us need to repent a little bit about the barriers we've created, our personal preferences that we've put in our lives. Barriers that keep people out. Maybe this morning you hear this message and you've never really followed Jesus. Maybe you've seen all these barriers as reasons not to, but this morning I hope you see that it's Jesus alone. He is the one that is worth following. He is the one that gave His life for you. He is the one that is reaching out and calling you this morning to come and follow Him. Would you pray with me?